Welcome to the Alt Review Podcast. I am GP. As always, joining me from Corpus Christi, Texas. What is up, Mike?
I'm Spring Hill, Jack.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to you right now.
Deep cut podcast right there.
Wow. Like you have there. That was a good one there. All right, here we go. I don't know. Listen, folks, I don't know if he has the power of the Ultimate Warrior tonight, but he is, I've been talking to him for about an hour now, and he is juiced up, so good luck.
You know it, dude. I'm bringing it.
Well, we have on the line, we have our artist interview. Michael, won't you introduce who we have?
Sure. So we are really excited because we have a fantastic artist, Talker, also known as Celeste, who's here to join us tonight. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well. So we just have a couple of questions for you and would love to share your music with the audience here. Obviously, you know, just in general, first, I'd like to say your stuff's fantastic and we're really glad and excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm stoked to be here.
All right. Celeste, first off, can you tell us a little bit about your musical background?
Yeah, I mean, I've pretty much played music my whole life, you know, whatever that means. I grew up playing piano and guitar and cello, of all things. And yeah, it was super, you know, I come from a really musical family. My parents are not professional musicians by any means, but definitely, you know, big music fans, always, you know, going to shows together and stuff like that and introducing me to music at a young age. And my dad actually taught me piano. So, you know, definitely a musical in their own right. And I grew up doing that and then, you know, did all the classic like high school music stuff, you know, singing in all the choirs and doing all that and forming bands and stuff. And then I ended up actually going to college for music in Miami. And yeah, I don't know. I always knew that I wanted to, you know, be a musician and make a career out of it and be an artist and a songwriter. And it's definitely like a very challenging career path, but I do feel super lucky in the sense that it's always kind of just been what I wanted to do. And I grew up, you know, doing that and then being around it.
That's absolutely fantastic that you're getting to do what you've always wanted to do. Even if it is challenging. Yeah. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
So you have a brand new EP out, Horror Films. Can you tell us a little bit about the writing, recording, and promotion process for that?
Yeah, totally. I think what's cool about doing your first record or, you know, your first EP is that you have, like, so much time to do it because no one cares if you're putting music out or not. Like, you hope that they care after you start putting it out. But when you don't have anything out, like, no one knows who you are and you kind of have all the freedom in the world. So I've been, some of the songs on the record, like, I wrote or started writing upwards of, like, 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, I think Changes, my co-writer Dan and I, we started writing it, like, the first or second time we met. Just kind of like throwing something together just to see what happens. And then, you know, we ended up doing a bunch of other projects together and then came back to it. And as I decided to do an EP, I was like, oh, I love this song. Like, I want to do it. So there was a lot of things like that, which it came together very organically. And it was just like, these songs are really, they really do capture an era of my life because a lot of them are just songs that were written because I was, you know, I needed some sort of catharsis or I was like genuinely going through these things at the time. And then, you know, like I said, I've always wanted to do an artist project, but for a long time, I didn't really know exactly what that looked like. Like I didn't, you know, I've always leaned towards doing like alternative music and, you know, incorporating rock and stuff, but again, never had an exact idea of what that sounded like for me. So I was just kind of like writing and figuring it all out. And then maybe, like late 2017, I want to say, like later towards that part of the year, I was like, okay, I have my songs. I know what direction I want to take them. And so I started producing them out, and I'm super lucky to have exclusively worked with just my friends who I already knew who were great producers on the record. So it came together very naturally. And then as far as promoting it, you know, I did everything myself for this record. I'm just now starting to slowly build, you know, a small team of a few people who are stoked on the music and stuff, but it's also very early. And when I started putting out the songs on the record, I was like completely doing it by myself. And when the first single came out, which was Collateral Damage, I was like doing all of my own publicity and doing all of my own outreach and all of my own everything. And I'm still like super involved in that. You know, it's very much just me for the most part. But that it was like, I did everything myself. So I was actually on tour with another band that I play keys for, just like as part of their live setup. And I would, you know, we'd have like 8 hours to fill in the van. So I would put my hotspot on my phone and just start like going through music blogs and, you know, people like yourselves and everyone, you know, and just as many people as I could find, and just like figure out like who I thought would be into the music and send it to them. And I was super lucky in that people actually like liked it and responded. And then, you know, a few songs later, I started, you know, trying to build up people who could help me kind of reach out to some other people and everything. But a lot of it just started out on my own. And so it's been like a crazy long process, but it's also been a very organic process. It was a super long answer, but, you know, it really was, so.
No, that's really great. I mean, all of the detail in that answer and, you know, the fact that you are, you know, it seems like it would be a lonely world trying to put a record out and promote it and doing a lot of that by yourself. But also the advantage that I could see is you control your image. You're not conforming to anybody's ideas of what you should be. You are you, and that, especially in music, is great.
Totally. And I think, you know, now I've established that. And so as I slowly am bringing on people and trying to like build up a team, or, you know, the word team in the music industry is so loaded, but just like people who want to help me out, you know what I mean? As I'm building that up, I've already established that, yeah, like this is me and I'm very in control of the brand and the image, and I want to make sure that it is reflective of me and it's nothing contrived. And so, yeah, it was a lot. It was like so much work, and I was like pulling my hair out, you know, finding this, just like doing all this. But I think it was definitely worth it. And I think that, I don't know, I think, you know, you can throw a bunch of money at promo and publicity, but if you're not putting the same amount of work in at the beginning, like, that shows.
For somebody that has never seen you live, what do they have to know about a talker show live?
That it's sick. It's really high energy. It is a rock show. I'm really honestly so excited and proud of the live show that we've built. I have a full band, you know, there's five of us, and it's, you know, everyone, I'm super close with all of them, and we all just like really believe in each other's music and each other's visions. And, you know, it's this EP, I'm really excited about it and proud of it, but a lot of the songs, they'll have like ebbs and flows of energy and really high builds, but a lot of it is lower energy. And the live show is definitely more up there and really has like a cool feel to it. And that's something that I'm trying to bring in, you know, as I work on new music and stuff, bringing in that, you know, that high energy into the music. But yeah, it's a rock show, man.
I love me a rock show.
So I heard that you were recently working on a music video. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yeah. So that video, actually just came out six weeks ago, maybe. I have no idea what day it is. But yeah, so I put out a video for Intimidated, And that was, yeah, I mean, that was a project. It was, I did it with some friends who are, you know, video filmmakers in LA, and we filmed it in my house. So the whole video, it's out. It's on YouTube. You can like go check it out, but it's all inside my house. And we had like a crew of 10 people crammed into my very small living room and like shoved all the furniture and we're like, you know, detaching the smoke detector so that we can use a fog machine in my house and like all this stuff. So it was honestly like so much work. But it was really cool. And we just shot it in the day at my house. And I don't know, it felt very personal, because of that, which I think was really essential for that song.
I love everything about that, how you're integrally involved in that. It's at your house. You're pulling the smoke detectors away. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you said it's a lot of work, but I'll bet it was a lot of fun, too.
Oh, totally. It's so fun, and it's so gratifying. I mean, you know, obviously, as I've said and as we've established, like, I'm very much a control freak. I'm in, you know, I definitely want to be in control of what's going on to a certain degree and make sure that it's, you know, very, you know, under what I want Falker to be. And, yeah, so it was fun. And again, it was with my friends. And I think for this EP, I mean, everything that I am working on and plan to put out in the future, like it's all going to be very authentic and very, you know, still very organic like that. But, this EP, because it was the first one, it was so, you know, special and precious to me. And so the videos, it was all the same mentality for sure.
Okay. Our next question here, it's going to seem like a trick question, but that's the whole reason we ask it. The whole reason we ask it is because we're trying to kind of get an idea of your inspirations in music. So with that being said, you're promoting a show, you're putting this show on, you're on the bill, who else is with you?
In my perfect world.
In your perfect world.
In my perfect world. Well, in my perfect world, I am on a tour playing stadium opening for Foo Fighters because I have a weird obsession with Dave Grohl. But but in my like show that is just like perfectly curated to everything I want it to be, we got Wolf Alice, we got Death Cab for Cutie, or even just Ben Gibber just playing his songs acoustic and just like, you know, making everybody weep before I walk on stage. you know, we got the War on Drugs, and then we also got, you know, like the Paramore, more like pop punk side of things. So it definitely is pretty broad, but I don't know. I just, a lot of, you know, all of the bands and artists that I've drawn inspiration from or just like, you know, listened to, it's all stuff that is just very emotive and moves me. I think, you know, the show that I would put on, I would want everybody to just be crying while also like moshing.
I love it.
Yeah, I definitely need to run across a live talker show at a festival. That sounds like it could be the most fun ever.
With some crushing, or I don't know how to combine crying and moshing. Crushing?
Oh, yes, crushing, probably.
Oh my gosh. So do you have any upcoming projects or shows that you want people to know about?
Yeah. So I actually have a show coming up soon. So I don't know, you know, how far out this will be from when everybody's hearing this, but if anyone's in LA, I do have a show, at the Moroccan Lounge on April 17th. And, it's going to be really sick. It's not a traditional show setup where, you know, there's like X amount of fans on the bill. They all play a set. All of their friends leave as soon as they're done, you know. It's kind of a more integrated show. So there's a few other artists on the bill and we're all kind of like serving as each other's house band. And then like, they'll all come in and play a talker song. And then my friend will come in and play, you know, one of their songs. And it'll just kind of be like that all night for like an hour and a half. So that'll be pretty sick. But yeah, you know, I know the EP just came out, you know, a few weeks ago, but I'm already deep into the mind, you know, mindset for the next one. I'm hoping to have more music out, you know, by like the late summer. So, you know, I have so much music that's been written, and because it was such a long process, you know, I've just been writing so much, and then I feel like I have a very clear direction for what I want to be doing. So there's definitely more music coming as soon as I can get it out.
That's great. Hey, make sure you let us know. We'd love to get you back on here and promote that one too.
Yeah, definitely. For sure, yeah.
Love getting the scoops.
Right. He's funny. When someone says, I've got new music that I'm going to start working on, he puts his hands over his head and starts rubbing them together with his devilish little smile. All right, Celeste. Well, that is all the questions we have for you this evening. Before we let you go, at the end of the show, we are going to play Collateral Damage in its entirety. Won't you tell us a little bit about that song?
Yeah, that song, despite not being the first song on the EP that I wrote, it was the first song on the EP that I worked on where I had a super clear vision for what Talker was and for what the EP was going to be. You know, when I wrote it, it was like, okay, this is the sound, this is what we're doing, this is it, boom, it's happening. So that was really exciting, but I wrote the song with my friend April, actually. We wrote it together, and yeah, it was like it's kind of the only song on the EP that's like my big middle finger to a specific person. And it just came from a very genuine point of anger and frustration. And you know, I think that everybody probably has dealt or will deal, say that 5 times fast, with somebody who, you know, is very self-destructive, but also to the point where they need to destroy everyone around them, and their idea of a friendship or a relationship or whatever that might be is to just kind of like dance around the edges of it just to keep you kind of needing each other, and then, you know, dropping the ball on it, and it kind of just came to a head. So this is for anyone who, you know, feels like they've been totally screwed over. And, but yeah, it came from a super genuine place of just being over all of it. So yeah, feels good. It's a good one to play live and get it all out there.
All right. Well, I kind of cheated. I listened to it before we,
me too.
Yeah. See, you cheater. No, I'm kidding. No, it's, I loved it. It was a great song.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, that is all the time that we have. We won't take up any more of your time this evening. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Talker, Collateral Damage. Stay tuned after Michael and I stop yammering on, and you will hear Collateral Damage in its entirety this evening. Thanks again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
You too.
There you go. Talker right here on the Alt Review Podcast.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she had... That was a very good interview. Like, her answers were...
Great stories.
Right. Like, that makes it so much easier for guys like us trying to interview somebody for her to have just such great answers to the questions. It makes us look better than we are.
Right. Right. Professional interviewers.
Well, be careful.
I mean, like I said, like professional
like,
interviewers.
Like there were parts of like, it that we're kind of like those two old guys on what is it, the Muppets or whatever it is. Oh, that was pretty good. Well, there were some parts of it that were bad.
It was all right. It was terrible.
I didn't really like it. Boo! No, it's, no, that was, hearing her describe her show and talking about, you know, and how she incorporated festivals in there. Like, she seems like she would be a really good live show to see at a festival.
Right. And I'm glad that she's getting that circle around her and she's kind of building her brand. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think that that, you know, Talker is one that you need to get in on the ground now. Like, I could see her blowing up, honestly. And I don't say that about a lot of artists, but I could definitely see that with her. She's got something kind of comps I could think of are like Meg Myers and artists like that, who kind of have an edgy rock style to their music, but in her own way. And so I could see her blowing up, and I think that, you know, get in while you can.
Yeah. And it's the control that she takes with her brand and her image is, you know, I think she's doing it right. And like I said, you know, it seems like it can be a long and lonely world when you're starting out and you're doing everything on your own. But, you know, now she's getting that team around her, but she also has already built something. So they're not going, it's not like somebody's going to change it.
Right. Exactly. She has the idea of what Talker is. And so, you know, someone's not going to come in and be like, oh, let's go in this direction. Like, she has the direction.
Right. We're already going. There's no turning back now.
Right.
All right, brother. Reviews and recommendations. This week, Michael had quite the workload for me. 3 entire albums. And if this continues, we're going to need to discuss a pay raise, sir.
Dude, you know, I thought it was going to be a light week for albums, but it was, part of the problem is that we had like Billie Eilish's album and White Denim's album come out this week, but I didn't want to wait to review those until the podcast. So I was like, well, we might be lean for material here. And then I started looking around and I was like, oh, there's some other stuff that we haven't reviewed yet and it needs reviewing. So, there was definitely wasn't lean like I thought it was going to be. So that's on me.
Yeah. There was a bit to get through here on this one. So that's all right though. I mean, it was, I don't know, that one of them, you changed my mind.
I'll say that we'll do the two words that changed your mind here in a minute.
Right.
Do you want to start with the first one?
Yeah, we'll start with the first one. Jenny Lewis On the Line is the album that we reviewed. This one for me, there were some good songs, and then there were two songs in particular that, I don't know, they just kind of threw me, and so much so that they detracted from the entirety of the album for me. And the real culprit here is they almost seemed like a cop-out. The rhyme lines seemed like a cop-out to instead of putting forth a story, it almost sounded like she was just shouting out random sentences. Those two tracks were Dogwood and Taffy. But on the upside, Little White Dove, On the Line, and Rabbit Hole were all very good songs for me. All in all, gave the album a 3 out of 5.
I hate bad rhyme schemes. I hate them.
Yeah, they were just so bad in those two songs that it, like, I kept listening to, you know, to more songs, and it just, my mind was stuck on, wow, that was rough.
I didn't let those two get me down as much as you did, but I did.
I like it.
They did stick out to me, especially after you mentioned them too. And we went back and listened to them together, and I was like, oh man. I was like, oh man. And so, because I get caught up so much with Jenny Lewis's album in all of it. She does a very atmospheric song to me. It's very much a classic experience. It reminds me of a different time. And so there was a lot of songs that I liked a lot. Her voice is classic. Her music that accompanies it is very classic as well. Reminds you of kind of 70s music a little bit. And so I just, you know, I was very much swept up in that. And so I was like, this is nostalgia, delicious nostalgia for me right now. Just getting that. And a couple of the songs that I particularly loved, one of them is the hit that everybody's already heard, Head's Gonna Roll. And it's just for me, the thing that I liked about that song the most was probably something that most people don't think about, was just the pacing of the vocals in that song. How she delivered the lines was just so unique to me. And how she flipped into that almost falsetto during the hook. It was just so masterfully done. I was just like, this is so good. And so I love that song. On the Line, I also loved as well as you did. I thought that it had a fantastic hook. And then Wasted Youth, I just put timeless sounding, which was a lot of, again, going back to In General, what really kind of got me to the song. And I know, you know, for me, 70s nostalgia, you know, I'm 31 years old, but I have listened to a lot of 70s music. I've been listening to that music. I was raised on it. So, you know, it reminded me of just old 70s music on, like, if I had this on a vinyl, oh my God, like, I could just, this album would be fantastic to listen to on a vinyl. It would just sound like pure freaking gold.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 4 out of 5.
All right. Now, before we move on to the next one, I gotta say, I did not realize, I don't know how I didn't realize this, I mean, we've been brothers all of our lives, that I am 10 freaking years older than you.
Yeah.
That's, all right. I don't even know what else to say. All right, moving on to Dean Lewis, a place we knew. Sorry.
All right.
Dropping stuff.
Let me drop the knowledge on this one. Or I don't even want to do this.
Okay, how about this? I'm going to say what I thought at first, and then you come in just like you did when we were talking before we started recording. You come in with your little push pin and pop my bubble.
All right.
So I originally thought, you know, it's a pretty decent album. It's not necessarily my kind of music, but I enjoyed the album, but there's a reason why I enjoyed the album. And it's not that I'm a huge fan of the other either, but there are some catchy songs. So this particular album, the song Be Alright, was a positive for me because it told a story and it told it well. Like, I had to keep listening. I had to know what happened. It was a really well put together song. And now for the Big Giant Bubble Pop.
I struggled so much with this album, and I'll give you two words. Ed Sheeran. This album reminded me, I don't know a lot of Ed Sheeran songs, but I'm familiar with some of his music. This album reminded me of if someone was to do like a cover album of just lesser known Ed Sheeran songs that are like off of albums that he had that maybe didn't chart, and then just put them onto one compilation, and that's what it is. That's what this reminded me of. Like, I'm not trying to hate, but that is exactly what this reminded me of. His vocal style, Dean Lewis, was even the vocal inflection. Like, he was doing the vibrato. He was doing the slap guitar. He was doing all of it. I was like, dude, there's homage, and then there's, like,
imitation.
There's straight jack. there's imitation.
And that's what got me. Like, I'm not a huge Ed Sheeran fan, but the songs of his that I know are pretty catchy. And so I mean, as soon as you said that, I was like, well, that's why I kind of enjoyed it. And then we listened to a little bit more of, we listened to it together, and I couldn't get it out of my head at that point. I'm like, damn, that's it. This is not homage. This is imitation.
Right, like, dude, straight up, like, putting on the same exact accent, like, and I'm not saying, like, an English accent, because Ed Sheeran's English, I'm not saying that, because I'm sure that Dean Lewis is probably English as well, I'm saying, like, Ed Sheeran's English accent, like, that's what I'm saying, not like literally the same vocal, like the same vocal style. It's like
he practices doing an impersonation of Ed Sheeran's voice.
Yes, it's like someone doing a cover of Pearl Jam and singing exactly like Eddie Vedder. Like, there's nobody else sings like that.
Right. I feel it.
So, I struggle with that big time, and every song I went through, I was like, damn. Like, and I just would, and then, like, in every song that was, he was incorporating another part, and there was even some of them, he did, like, the little Ed Sheeran raps, and I was like, oh my god, no, dude.
I originally had this album pegged at a 4 out of 5, and then you came along with your push pin and popped my bubble, brought it down to a 3.
I put it at a 2. Like, I can't, because there's skill needed to play it, I guess. But, dude, this is just straight up like, this
stole
is
your
like
show.
How, this is, I'm about to, oh, okay, it's about to get real mean in here. This is like how Coldplay just straight up jacks people's songs. Like, this is, but not quite that level. Like, he's not doing the exact same songs, but damn. Like, it's, you know, if one's yellow mustard, the other one's Dijon. Like.
Little gourmet mustard.
Right. Like, this dude. You
got me choked up over here.
This dude had me like Ed Sheeran is the Mountain Dew and Dean Lewis is the Mountain Lightning. Like, I was.
All right.
I ain't trying to be rude.
But... All right, we got to move on before you say something meaner. Damn.
All right.
It was awful vitriolic of you, sir.
I can't help it, dude.
All right, Andrew Burr. My finest work yet. What do you got for me?
I absolutely love this album. I thought was probably... I struggled between it and Jenny Lewis, but I think it was the best one that we had this week. And there's a lot going on. There's the song Sisyphus had a fantastic beat. There was some whistling in there, which I'm normally not a whistling guy in a song, but it was done very well. And I was like, all right, like I'm like, change my mind. Like, damn, you changing my mind. And so I was like, get it, Andrew Bird. You go on with your bad self. And the vocals in that song were super strong. So I was pretty happy about that. Then there was also the Bellevue Bridge Club, which was just straight up alt country, like twang for me, which I love me some alt country. That is my jam. And so, you know, that kind of Jason Isbell, Ryan Adams kind of flavor, that's what this was. And I was all about that song. That song was fan-freaking-tastic. So, and then the other one was Proxy War. Had kind of a jazzy feel to it, and again, I use a description I used for Jenny Lewis. It had a very classic feel to it. Kind of reminded me almost of like a lounge song a little bit, but just very classical to it and very timeless. And so I really like that song as well. But the whole album, there wasn't a clunker, I felt like, on that album at all.
No, I think I mentioned to you, like, this album, I could see myself in some sort of venue, kind of a bar scene venue, and this playing, that, you know, this guy on the stage playing and it being a hell of a good time. I liked Proxy Wars as well. Bloodless was a very bluesy, I mean, I just love that song, and the way he incorporates different types of instruments. There's violins, I believe I heard on there. Mm-hmm. Saxophone, I believe I heard on there. You know, he incorporates different types of instruments. I thought it was a great album. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Dang, I like it. Oh, I forgot to say I gave it a 4 out of 5, but it was It was a high 4 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, it was
been, like,
I enjoyed it. Like I said, I mean, I at one point was, you know, bobbing my head, tapping my fingers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was into it big time. So those are all the reviews that we had this week.
Yes, all 487,000 of them. I'm sorry, I'll quit busting your balls.
I
wouldn't be an older brother if I didn't tease you, right?
I didn't mean to go overboard with Dean Lewis. I'm sure he's a fantastic guy.
Don't take it back. You said it now. It's out there. It'll be on the interwebs in 48 hours.
I mean, I still mean it.
All right, Meanie Pants. Feature of the week, we will bring back the OG versus the cover this week for you. We actually have two tracks that we are going to debate about. One of which...
We gotta declare before we even say it, though, before the music nerds get us, we're aware that we are not debating the OG of this song. The OG of this song is by Prince. We are aware of that. But there are two fantastic covers of this song that I think...
So this one's actually cover versus cover.
Yeah, in my humble opinion... have exceeded the OG, even though the OG is a fantastic song in its own right, by Prince.
Now, see, this first one is going to be kind of tough for me, because I don't feel as strongly as I do about the second one. The reason I don't feel as strongly as I do is because I had never heard the version you're arguing for until we came up with this. Had I not listened to it anymore, maybe I would be better here. But I listened to it a couple more times, your version that you're arguing for.
Yeah.
And
got into you.
I have something. Essentially, I'm kind of conceding this now, this first one. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm still going to make my points for... But
all right.
I have a sentence that some I can't take credit for. Somebody else said, but you got to hear it. So okay. The first song we're doing is Nothing Compares to You. Again, we're fully aware that the original of this song was Prince. Then it was covered by Sinead O'Connor. And then covered by Chris Cornell. We understand that we're both arguing for a cover here. Bear with us. Michael, go.
So I want to preface this just by saying that I am absolutely in no way a hater of the Sinead O'Connor version. So I'm just going to get that out there real quick, right quick, because I've always loved that version. But I mean, I said, damn. You put that spice, you put that funk, you put that good juju on the song. That's what Chris Cornell did with this song, man. He just came up, and he did it in one take. He came onto Sirius XM and was like, hey, everybody in this room, I'm about to make y'all legends today because your faces are going to be circulated on this video for the rest of time. And so that is essentially what happened. And he came in. And he played that song, and it was damn beautiful. Like, he took that song to a place I didn't know it could go. And Chris Cornell, and it wasn't like Chris Cornell was doing his high vocals either. It was one of the most understated Chris Cornell songs, I think, that is out there. Because when most people think of Chris Cornell, they think of, like, really high vocals. But in this one, it's just very simple, but just so eloquent and just so beautifully done. And then they have the cello on there, that cello with the acoustic guitar. That's just so beautifully paired together. And then when they had the acoustic guitar solo that Chris Cornell gives a nod to his guitarist for, it's just fantastic. Like, if you've never listened to this version, this might be... one of, if not the best cover of a song ever. Like, I just have trouble, maybe outside of Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah, this might be the best cover of a song ever. Like, it's damn close. I argued for it once against Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah and lost on an alt review poll, but it was close. But I will say this, this song is just so good. And it's something that Chris Cornell ties a little bit of both versions. So it's not just him covering Sinead's version. Like, he does a little bit of both versions that you can feel, like, vocally. And so I think that that's kind of cool, too. And so, and it's just something that he was just such a masterful artist that I think only he could do that. So that's all I have to say about that. But I'll concede the floor to you, sir.
Okay. Sinead O'Connor's version of this song came out right about the time I was starting to listen to music. That song was music. That was what led the way for me when it comes to music. So there's always going to be a soft spot. But before I even let you start talking, I conceded to you already on this song. And again, if I hadn't listened to it more over the last week, then I could have put together a better argument here. But simply stated, Prince created poetry. Sinead O'Connor made it special. Chris Cornell made it a masterpiece.
Yeah,
I mean,
I love it.
I don't know what else to say. I'm always going to have that soft spot for the Sinead O'Connor version because that song is what started my love for music. But you can't, even for the sake of argument, you can't deny the greatness that Chris Cornell put on that song.
And I had the same experience as you with the Sinead O'Connor version. That was the one that I was raised on for the longest time too. And then Chris Cornell came out of nowhere a couple years ago and did that cover. And you know, even back then, I thought that, you know, I love Sinead's version more than Prince's original version, but they're all three great. But I just don't think it's close. Like you said, Chris Cornell made it a masterpiece.
Right.
It's just,
I mean, that's like I said, it maybe I could have, the more I listened to Chris Cornell's version, the more holes it poked in my in my argument for Sinead O'Connor's version. So before we even started this, I had to concede this one to you. Now, with that being said, I will not concede this next one.
This one's going to be tough because this is a tough one for me. Oh.
Go ahead. You've got the floor first, sir.
Okay.
The song is The Sound of Silence.
I'm having a similar experience to what you just had. And it's not because, I'll be honest with you, I used to love Disturbed when I was in the heavy metal. I don't love Disturbed anymore. But what I will say, though, is Simon and Garfunkel were one of the bands that when I was really getting into music, and, you know, as I said before, I listened to a lot of 60s, 70s, 80s music. Simon and Garfunkel were one of the bands that I really, really got into. And along with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and those sorts of bands, of course. But, you know, Simon and Garfunkel, I used to have their Greatest Hits album, and I just wore it out. And Sounds of Silence, it's just a timeless song. And it's one of those that is an atmospheric song, too. It makes you feel like, it's the first song that ever made me feel like I was underwater. Like, that's what it makes me feel like. I'm drifting underwater and it takes you to another place. What I will say is it's a little monotone in comparison to the Disturbed version. So I will concede that to you, since we're given concessions here. So I will, I do have to say that. And that's surprising to me because so many, Simon and Garfunkel songs are not that, but that song is. And, I still love it and I still prefer it to the Disturbed version, but I can easily understand why somebody would prefer the Disturbed version. It's like reading a book versus watching a movie. Like that's the best analogy I have for it. You know, I think Simon and Garfunkel is the book and Disturbed is the movie. Like you're getting more action. You're getting more bang for your buck.
To use your analogy, I would have to go the other direction. Disturbed is the book. Simon and Garfunkel is the movie. They had to leave something out to fit time constraints. If you read the book, you got the whole story and all the details. But if you watched the movie, it was good and it was most of the story, but some of the small details weren't there. Disturbed changed, I believe, how they were viewed with this song. Because for the most part, up to that point, Disturbed was Down With The Sickness, was even Device, the other band that David Draiman is lead for, the song Vilify, those that very growly singing style that he has. He flipped that entire image on its head when he walked out on that stage on the Conan O'Brien show and dropped this. They changed their image. They changed who they could be. And their music after this song opened up a whole nother direction for them. Everybody thought David Draiman was just... Blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. Dude's got chops. He can sing. And, you know, he incorporated some of that into the Sound of Silence there at the end of it. But this song, when I first saw it, when they sang it on the Conan O'Brien show, I was captivated. I knew of the song, it just wasn't... Simon and Garfunkel didn't grab me with this song. Disturbed did.
And I think for me, it's part of it is I'm such a big Simon and Garfunkel fan, but if you were to ask me what is my favorite Simon and Garfunkel song, this is probably 8 or 9 on the list. That's even fair. Though it might be, even though it might be number one for a lot of people. Like, this is a popular song by them, but it was never one of my favorite songs by them because I always thought it was too monotone a little bit. I thought they could, you know, they could have done more with it, but.
And David Draiman did.
So that's why I'll concede to you that they did do some more with that. So.
I mean, it's, that song is probably top five for me. I mean, it's probably one of my top five favorite songs. I love that song. And like I said, it's not that I hate Simon and Garfunkel or I hated their version. It just didn't grab me the way this one, the way Disturbed did.
I feel you. I can see that. And like I said, this song has always been one of those ones that I listened to it, but it wasn't ever one of the ones that I particularly loved. Cause I think it's one of the ones that Paul Simon doesn't do a lot of, do a lot on, that is. And Art Garfunkel doesn't do a lot on vocally. Like, it's just, like, Art Garfunkel has one of the best voices. Like a Bridge Over Troubled Water. If you listen to that song, you know, where he does his vocals and that, those are some of the most profound vocals in music history. Versus the vocals in the song are very downtrodden and da 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 da.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I mean, did we just like argue but concede to each other before we even started arguing on both counts? Is that what just happened?
I think so. I just don't want to agree with Disturbed being better than Simon and Garfunkel, but I guess I am in this instance.
It's okay, Michael. It's okay. I can be right once in a while.
I love it.
All right, this week for Highlight the Site, I chose to highlight the Bloody Classics, Keras, with highlighting the Clash London Calling from 1979.
I was just listening to that.
Let's see, only a year after I was born. Damn, I'm old.
Freaking punk royalty.
Right, absolutely. Okay. I'm not going to ruin it for you. You got to go read it.
Right. Read it, and if you haven't listened to it, like, or if you haven't listened to it in a while, like,
listen to it and then read it.
Yeah, like, it holds up. It's a damn good album. Like,
yeah, and Keras always does a fantastic job with the Bloody Classics.
Yeah, she's always got a bunch of stuff in there. And when I saw this one was the one she was doing, I was like, yes, queen, yes. just because the Clash are just so beloved. And so I absolutely love it. And so that it made me, reading it made me want to listen to it.
There you go. So if you haven't listened to the Clash and you don't think you want to, go read this article, then you'll want to.
Right, right. And why wouldn't you want to listen to the Clash? Like,
I don't know. Maybe you're having a bad day. You didn't have any coffee or anything. I don't know.
Right. Right. So this piece that I'm excited to highlight because we have Elise is back.
Yay! So, welcome back, Elise.
Yeah, she had to take a break for a little bit, but she is back. And so she just wrote a piece on Monday, which is tonight. What? Which is when we record this. but yeah, behind the lyrics, 90s favorite, Eve 6, Inside Out. I'm sure that you remember that one. Everyone doing the little rap at the end of that, in the middle of that song.
Yep.
We can't do it on the podcast because we don't want to get sued back to the Stone Age.
Nope.
But yeah. Yeah, so check it out. And in this one too, she offers like multiple theories as to what it could be about. And I'm like, this is like some conspiracy theory, like levelness. I love it.
Warping your mind.
Right. I know. I was like, what? And I'll be honest with you. Like, I just was the person that was always like, and doing like doing the rap and never really cared to think about what I was singing. And now I'm like, what? My mind was just like blown. So, if you were one of those people like me, go check it out because she has like three different theories on what the song could be about. So check it out. It's pretty sweet.
Awesome. You can check that and any article that is put out by Alt Review at www.altreview.com.
Yeah, for your reading pleasure.
For your reading pleasure. We're up against it, brother. It is time to go already.
Damn it.
I know, these things fly by now. It only takes like... It doesn't seem like we've been recording that long, but here we are pushing an hour, so... We gotta run. So, with that being said, thank you for joining us. I am GP. For Michael in Corpus Christi, be good or be good at it. We are out.
All things alt, always. You want someone to say.